Thank you.
Dwayne's on the line.
Okay. Good evening. This is Nancy Sorden, Chair of the Pacifica National Board. It's Thursday, March 28th at 8:47 p.m. Eastern Time, and I am calling the open session of the board to order. Mr. Secretary, would you please take the roll?
Oh, sorry. I was unmuted. I just muted myself. Okay. Grace Aaron, listener representative, KPFK. Can't hear you, Grace. Gary Post, affiliate representative, Cerebral Radio. Can't hear you, Gary. Heard him earlier.
Adrian, Gary, you're muted. I can see you, Gary. You're muted.
Gary's here.
Okay, so Gary is here. Thank you. Adriana Casanave, listener representative, KPFT. Can't hear you, Adriana.
Adriana, you're muted.
Adriana? Okay, we'll come back to her. Robin Collier, affiliate representative, KCEI.
I think Robin has an excused absence.
That's what I was thinking. There were several people that did. Chris Corey, listener representative, KPFA. I believe he also asked for excused absence. Bill Crozier, listener representative, KPFT, is here. Joseph Davis, staff representative, KPFT. Thank you, Joseph. Catherine Davis, staff representative, WBAI. Thank you, Catherine. Benito Diaz, listener representative, WPFW.
Present.
Benito is here. Jan Goodman, listener representative, KPFK. And for you, Jan. William Heerwagen, listener representative, WBAI.
Present.
Dan
William's
Asperger.
Here.
Sabrina? He's absent, by the way.
And who did? Oh, Jan did. Oh, yeah.
Jan did.
Thank you. Sabrina Jacobs, staff representative, KPFA. Can't hear you, Sabrina. Dwayne Lark, listener representative, KPFT.
Present.
Hey, Dwayne is here. Ken Laufer, listener representative, WBAI. And here you, Ken. Tony Leon, staff representative, WBFW.
Present.
Tony is here. Mansoor Sabah, listener representative, KPFK. And Terry Mansoor. Nancy Sorden, listener representative, WPFW.
Here.
Nancy's here. Alex Steinberg, listener representative, WBAI.
He asked for an excused absence as well.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. Carol Travis, listener representative, KPFA. And here, Carol. Tom Voorhees, listener representative, KPFA. I believe he asked for excused absence. Oscar Washington, listener representative, WPFW.
Madam Chair, can you hear me? Because somebody mute me and then somebody dropped me from the call.
Okay. We can hear you.
Thank you.
Okay, Adrian is here. Thank you. I didn't hear Oscar. Going back, I didn't hear Grace Aaron or Robin Collier or Chris Corey or Joseph Davis or Catherine Davis or Jan Goodman or Sabrina Jacobs or Ken Laufer or Mansoor Sabah or Carol Travis or Muscula Washington. Maxie Jackson?
Maxie's present.
Okay, Maxie's here. Thank you. John Tatum, parliamentarian.
John Tatum, present on the call.
Okay. Okay, John's here. Thank you. Larry Dankner, our interim CFO. Can't hear you, Larry. So let me count. We have 8 directors present. No quorum.
Okay. We don't have quorum. We can't excuse absences. So I don't think there's any point in seeing who has requested excused absences unless we get a quorum. Be here. I'm trying to find the. Here we go. So the we still are, even though we don't have a quorum, we have a presentation at 9 o'clock, which we will still have after we adjourn the meeting, and we'll hear from our executive director as well. I also wanted to, on what was going to be item 4 on the agenda, outgoing board business, I wanted to thank the outgoing board. This was before I realized we're having another meeting next week. There's one more meeting next week that's on the calendar of this 2018 board. But that is just for a special purpose of dealing with the bylaw amendments. And so I would like to, at this time, thank the board, the outgoing board members, some who are term limited and will not be back. So that would be Carol Travis and Adriana Casanave will be stepping off their local station boards, or have stepped off their local station boards. And so I wanted to thank them for their service over these last 6 years, and thank those who have been with us this year. Some of us may be coming back, some of us may not be coming back, but I wanted to say thank you to everyone. And it's been a tough year. We did get a lot done. Progress is slow, and we've been steadily, putting one foot in front of the other and getting places. We haven't really been going backwards that I can see. We've just been going slower than we wanted to. But we have been getting things accomplished, and I want to thank the board and our new executive director and our old executive director, who was here for half of the year, or a little more than half of the year, and all of our staff members. I'm pulling together something for the new incoming board members, and I would like all the committee chairs to prepare reports of the activities and accomplishments, or where we are, what issues are being dealt with by these committees, something that I can put together with the briefing package like Bill had for us in the early part of 2018. And I would also like any of the outgoing board members to send any suggestions or for what they think should be in the briefing for the new board members. And basically, that's it. So I think we are not going to be able to do anything else tonight other than hear from Public Radio Program Directors Association, is it, Maxie?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
Public Radio Program Directors. Is that?
That's correct.
An association?
So,
is it called Public?
Public Radio Program Directors Association, yes.
Okay. So we'll be, I did not get a request to send them a phone number. Did you send them one?
I'm actually going to call them into this meeting myself.
Okay, great.
So I'm going to excuse myself for 1 minute and call Jessica France, who's going to do the presentation. And then I'll return the phone.
So I'm just going to say right now the meeting is adjourned. We're just going to hear two presentations. This is because we've got this scheduled and we're going to go forward with it. And we'll also take some questions of the public radio program director representative and questions for the executive director after he gives his report. And that's all.
Madam Chair, this is Bill.
No motions. Yes, Bill.
This is Bill with a question. And this will still be archived for the new board members to hear, correct? So we
yes.
can keep this on the stream and archive it. Okay. Thank you.
Are you sure about that? Because if we're coming off the stream.
No, we're not going off the stream. We're just adjourning. We're just adjourning because we don't have enough to continue with the meeting.
Noted. Okay. I'm going to excuse myself for a second, call our representative, and I'll be right back.
Okay. Otis, don't take us off the stream. If we do get more people joining us, we can recall the roll and see if we have quorum.
Jessica, are you with us?
Yes.
Okay. Carol, Nancy, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
Right, let me provide an introduction, if I may.
Yes, please.
Yep. So we last month joined Greater Public in membership. Greater Public, one of the leading experts in the industry around revenue generation, marketing, development, all areas of that. To upgrade the professional development of our staff members. In that same spirit, we are on the verge of joining Public Radio Program Directors Association. It is an organization that, like Greater Public, is sort of the industry standard, if you will, for best practices in programming. Joining us today on the call is Jessica France. She's the Director of Membership and Operations. Because of the nature of this being a public call, we won't talk about financials. But what I can say is that Jessica has offered the membership an outstanding deal on a group buy. And our goal is to take advantage of that starting at the beginning of April. And for that, I'm going to open the door, the floor, if you will, to Jessica France for her presentation. Jessica, the floor is yours.
Could you please Jessica, your last name?
Yes, it's Jessica France, and the last name is spelled F-R-A-N-T as in turtle, Z as in zebra. So it's pronounced like the country, just spelled
out. Okay, thank you. The pronunciations get a little muffled when on the phone, on our phone system here. So thank you.
That happens.
Welcome. Look forward to your
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I just thought I'd talk real quickly through the bullet points. I don't know how much you know about PRPD, the Public Radio Program Directors Association, so I'll go quickly through that and what the membership benefits are. So like Maxie said, we are a national organization dedicated to all things content and programming for public radio. We provide training and resources and networking opportunities for people in content curation, content creation, all across the country, and we work really closely with the networks, NPR, PRI, PRX, CPB. I've actually been working really closely with NFCB lately and Greater Public as well to kind of provide a network of resources and networking, a network of networking opportunities for our folks. So membership benefits, if you were to become a member, include everything from discounts at the conference registration to online resources. So when a station joins as a member, the benefits apply to every staff person at that station, as opposed to being like an individual member, it just applies to one person. The discounts at the conference are on the registration rate, but it also includes the pre-conference workshop. And we have two coming up this year, the PD workshop, the program director's workshop, which has been around for at least 25 years now, I think. So most of the program directors in their role today have gone through that course at some point. And PRPD members get a discount on that registration rate. And then we're also in our third year, I believe, of offering a Nielsen audience data workshop. So PRPD members can attend that workshop for free. It's a $500 charge for non-PRPD members. I'm actually working with Dave Sullivan right now to they're going to do like a drop-in so that members can stop by and get one-on-one consultation. So there'll be a workshop component where they teach you about the audience data analysis, but then you can drop in and get one-on-one help. Excuse me. We also are offering discounted participation rates in the public radio tech survey, which I believe is in their 10th or 11th year. I think it's their 10th year this year. We're going to be announcing that very soon because they're trying to get that in the field in May. And then we also, one of our biggest, most popular benefits that we offer is the online resources. And we have an archive of all the presentations that have happened at past conferences. The video and audio is archived there. And we recently instituted webinars. Maxie, I don't know if you have had a chance to attend any of those. PRPD took a break from producing webinars for a while, and we've just kicked them back off in January of this year. So right now they're open to everyone, whether they're a member or not, but then the archive of that goes behind the paywall. And we're, as we pick up momentum with these, we may tweak that a little bit, but we've had really – that all of them have sold out so far. Actually, that one that we did earlier this week was about podcasting and membership engagement around podcasting, like from an idea startup all the way to green light and production. And I got to be the moderator on that, which is the first time I'd ever done anything like that. So that was really fun. We are in the throes of refreshing the PD handbook, the program director's handbook, which the historic version of that lives on the PRPD site for members, and we still get a lot of requests for it. It's basically the training manual for all things program director, but we have commissioned a refresh or rewrite of that, and we are in the final stages of getting that approved. There's also a talk show handbook there as well. I think I mentioned the conference archives. Some other new projects that we started recently, you may have heard of the Weekend Project with WAMU. This was just announced a couple of weeks ago, and we are currently soliciting stations to participate through tomorrow, which if your stations haven't yet, you do not have to be a member to get on the list, but you should do that because the talks with the producers are going to start soon, and this is all about initiating talks with NPR and the people who control the weekend edition clock to try to add some more time for local news stations to have, you know, like 30 seconds here or there where they can do their own programming. I have had a lot of fun recently. We, within 6 months or so, set up some online discussion forums, and there's one for each format group. And the news talk group is actually, the conversations happening there has been very robust. And one of the things that has come out of that is sort of grassroots talk show directories, actually recommended by one of the people in the group, and we put together this Google sheet, and PRPD has been distributing it around, and I have really been shocked and pleased at how this thing has exploded. It's sort of an internal document where stations are tracking their program, when they air it, how they build it, who produces it, the contact information. So it's become like a resource. If you have an idea or you have a station or a question or a program or a question that you think you want to talk to somebody else who's doing something similar, and I've been really tickled to see how this thing has grown. We've got some other variations of that in the works, to be a question for another day. I think that covers all the major things. I feel like I just monologued for a long time. Do you have any questions for me?
No, that's good. Let me, before we open up the floor for questions from the member, the members of the PNB, the Pacifica National Board.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike when we had the presentation from Greater Public, Jessica and I have not had the opportunity to do a whole lot of pre-presentation discussion. One of the things I want to share in advance with Jessica so she can respond to your questions perhaps if they come up in this direction, so that she kind of understands where we're coming from, is that Pacifica stations really aren't in the blueprint of the NPR stations that carry mm-hmm. a lot of NPR, PRI, APM programming on the weekends or even on the weekdays. Really, the only nationally syndicated programming we air is Democracy Now! The bulk of our programming is locally produced. There are some national pieces that do find their way across our system. But for the most part, programming is locally produced with respect to Pacifica stations. One of the things that I think is useful, really valuable, and one of the reasons why I was really attracted to joining the PRPD for the Pacifica stations is the PD handbook, which I'm glad to hear is being updated, and the talk show handbook, because those are two areas that our stations either need to really focus staff development on, in the case of the PD. And then because we do so much local production, it's important that the talk show handbook be a resource that they can tap into as well. So I'll start with that and open the floor to Q&A from the members of this call. Have at it.
So does anyone, first of all, I'm going to ask if anyone listening also would like to ask a question, just email PNB Pacifica.org, and I'll try to get your, if it comes, sometimes it's a little delayed in getting to us, but I'll ask Jessica your question. And so now I'm going to open it up to the floor
mm-hmm.
for questions of Jessica. Take a stack.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Gary.
Can we have a little bit more specifics on the program director workshop?
Yes. Yeah, so for the first 22 years or so that this was offered, it was taught by Sheila Brew and Scott Williams. They decided to retire. PRPD took a year off to do a proper request for proposals, and it's now being taught by Helen Barrington and Tanya Ott. And it is a 2.5-day workshop, so the conference itself starts on a workshop, runs all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and half a day on Monday. And they touch on everything. It's basically from the ground up, audience data, air checking, all of it. I do know that there will be a higher component this year with a partnership with RRC to do the audience data component to really engage with the audience and what those numbers mean. They're still working that piece out. We have had such great feedback from the attendees in the past about that. There's actually some of the testimonials on PRPD's site are about that, and it really is the foundation of the programmer's role.
If I may step in for a second, the conference that Jessica keeps referencing is in August 26th to the 29th. It's in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the Marriott City Center. But that's where the PD workshop will take place. Obviously, our program directors might have interest in making the trip and experiencing the conference. So these are some of the benefits of going.
Yeah, I just pulled up the data right now. Well, I guess we're not talking about financials, but there's a significant discount for PRPD members. You can register for the workshop by itself or with conference attendance. But again, it's designed for new intermediate content leaders who supervise program directors who are starting out in that role. Helen and Tanya take great pains to engage with us about the attendee list as we're developing the course. and make sure that they're hitting everything that people need.
You know, Jessica, there's, if I may jump in before mm-hmm. someone else asks the next question, there are two other resources that you, actually three that I would love you to talk about briefly. One is about jobs. The second one is the core values research that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one is Millennial Research Project. If you could just mm-hmm. touch on those three, that would be helpful.
Yep. So when you say jobs, do you mean the job board?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, PRPD does have a job board that members can post their job openings on. We also do our own research to post things that might be interesting. We could do that for a fee if you're not a member, but again, there's a we try to keep a pretty consistent list of program-related jobs, and sometimes I even put reporter jobs and things like that in there because I think those are interesting on our website. So fast-forwarding to Millennial Research Project, that was fielded, I believe, in 2016, and we commissioned Jacobs Media to do some ethnographic-based research of specifically of the millennial cohort, and there's a comprehensive overview of that and the executive summary of that on the website, along with the, you can get all the details about actually how they did their research, but it's really interesting to see. They followed a bunch of millennials around on like a daily basis and just watch how they interact with audio and how they transition from different audio devices and what really is a radio. Some of them, when they were asked, do you have a radio in your house? They brought an iPad out. And it was really fascinating to see. I'm a millennial myself, so it was really fascinating to see how this research project turned out. Core values. So there is a historical core values report, which is the core values of public radio listeners. We recently did a webinar revisiting those core values to see if they still hold. Again, it's Jacobs Media. They're the big name researchers in commercial and non-commercial radio research. And we had them do a webinar with us to pull out specifically whether or not those core values still hold, and not to give away the ending, but they said, yes, they do still hold. And actually, we are working with them right now. I'll tell you this, but it's not been announced yet. We're working with them to do core values for everyone, which is going to bring in components for music stations. It's one of the pieces of feedback that we get quite often is that we need to focus on all the types of stations because news talk stations and tend to get a lot of attention when it comes to those things. Not, you know, by our directive, we've got to serve everyone agnostically, but we're working on doing some different takes on the core values. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank
you. Okay.
Anyone else have a question, Jessica?
Yeah, William.
Hare Wagon.
Go ahead, William.
Okay, hi. This is William Hare Wagon from New York. Nice to hear from you. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
We have, you say again?
I said thanks for having me.
Okay. You said something early on about staff members being eligible for something.
Yes.
Is there any, well, is that just like administrative staff or does it include all programmers? Because we have hundreds at each station, 100 to 200 or more unpaid staff members who are programmers.
Right. So the way PRPD's membership works, we have three tiers, an individual membership, which tends to be people that work as like consultants or researchers. We have like, I don't know, some recruiters that are members of PRPD, and they pay a certain rate just to be a one-person member by their first and last name. And then we have institution members, which are organizations like software providers, and they provide a different tier of membership dues based on their size of their organizations, and that includes just their staff people. They tend to be members so that they can exhibit at the conference at a discounted rate. And then the station members, PRPD has it set up that the benefits, the logging in to access the online resources, getting the discounted rate at the conference or pre-conference workshops, those apply to any of the staff at the stations. And yes, if your staff, if you've got 200 staff and all 200 one of them want to come to the conference, then they would get the member rate. That would be great.
Yeah, not if they would, but
we would love that. And I think the hotel would like not know what to do with that. The conference hotel would, it would be wonderful. The problem I would love
okay,
to have.
Thank you. One yep. other quick question. How many stations, organizations, et cetera, belong to your group? Or you know,
I think we're at 144 or so right now. Most of them are stations. I think we have 10 or 12 organizations or institutions, whatever you want to call them, and then 12 or so individual members.
And then I just thought of one more, if I may.
Sure.
Is there any thought given to whether these are NPR stations or more community-based stations?
We'll take anybody because we want to.
I mean,
you know, we offer
members.
To everybody. Right. Having done this for 3.5 years or so now, the majority of our members are smaller stations. They're smaller community stations and sometimes university licensees. But when I see station members lapse, they tend to be the bigger stations who feel like they're not necessarily benefiting from a PD handbook anymore, or they're not sending enough people to the conference, or whatever their reason might be to justify they have an upper tier of membership dues that they meet. Whereas the newer members that I'm acquiring are smaller and mid-level stations. I used to work at a mid-level station. We were always members of PRPD and Greater Public, for that matter.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, William. Are there other questions for Jessica?
Benito.
Benito, go ahead. Ask your question.
What would, Jessica, what would you say is the, I guess, definition of the role of PD in public radio, and what is generally or usually their relationship to the board to engage listeners and to both volunteer and paid staff?
Wow. That's complicated, and I think that about sums up the role of a PD. I have never been a PD, but I've worked very closely with them, and it's my understanding that the role is changing very much from what it was 10, 20, 30 years ago to what it is now. I like to use the word content curator, as somebody who is curating content, gathering valuable content that they get to know their listeners or their audience and providing them the richest experience based on what their audience needs are. I have watched the program director at the station that I work at. She was used to work at, not work at. She was very in tune with the needs of the staff and the volunteers to know what was going on, but she was careful. She had a good disposition for being a conduit to and from the staff and the volunteers and then to the upper management and the board, but she also was very protective of what was on the air, and I learned a lot from watching her listen.
Actually, I guess what I was trying to get at, and maybe I didn't say it properly, is to how what kind of back and forth is there usually in most of these public stations between the PD and the people around them, and like I say, the both paid and volunteer staff, each of whom has their shows, many of them have their shows and have ideas about shows, as well as listeners, engaged listeners, who also have their ideas about what should be on the station's airways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is Matt.
To what extent are their ideas included or let me put it like that.
Hey, this is Maxie, real quick. Jessica certainly should try to answer or should answer that question if she's comfortable. Because I've been a program director, Jessica acknowledged that she has not been. I can also chime in if that's desirable. So go ahead, Jessica.
Well, I was actually going to say you probably know better than I do because I haven't been a program director. The most experience I've had is working with community advisory boards.
Yeah, and that's actually a good transition. In traditional public radio, community advisory boards are the direct link in addition to, having an editorial department at a robust public radio station. Would be your sort of window into what the community aspires from programming at the local station. Most public radio stations in the NPR mode don't have a large body of locally produced talk shows in the spirit of Pacifica stations and community radio. But you've heard Jessica say that most of her members are small stations, and so I would imagine a good percentage of the member stations are like Pacifica stations and have several volunteer programmers and the like that we do. What I will say is that there is usually quite a bit of distance between the board of directors of the station and the program director. The program director usually does presentations to the board at the invitation of the general manager and the chair of the board to present audience numbers, maybe significant programming changes and the like. But the main interface that the program director has with volunteers, if they're programmers, is to work with them as they would with any program, whether it's paid or not paid, to ensure that, number one, the sound of the program is meeting expectations. That's why Jessica mentioned air checking. It's making sure that the program is consistent with the mission of the station, whatever that may be. And anytime there's any discussion about personnel issues, whether it be replacing a host because of performance issues or reformatting a program, whatever the case may be, the PD has an intimate relationship with all on-air programmers, whether they be paid or non-paid. And so that's traditional across the board. It's why the talk show handbook and the PD handbook are universally industry standard documents that are beneficial, whether you're a Pacifica station, a community radio station, or an NPR affiliate. The best practices, if you will, in that role are universal.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Benito?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Okay, Tony Leon, we haven't heard from you. Do you have a question for Jessica?
No, I don't. I was looking at the website, and there's a lot of information on the website.
Okay.
And I listen to her. I got. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Brianna, did you ask a question yet? Okay, we can't hear you. Dwayne, you haven't had a chance to ask a question yet. Did you have a question for Jessica? Dwayne, okay. I'm not looking at your website, Jessica. Where are you located?
Our headquarters, so to speak, is in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
We only have two staff, so it's a pretty small headquarters.
Okay, so you pretty much are like an online enterprise.
Yes. Yeah, we travel a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, Greater Public is operates in much the same way that PRPD does, in the sense that there's a core team, but that they use a lot of consultants to sort of make up their staff, if you will. And so when Jessica talks about having one-on-one consultation with the people around the PD workshop or the handbook, those are consultants who work with them. And so that model is pretty consistent with these affinity groups in the system.
Mm-hmm. Can you be invited to stations to talk to staff, give presentations to staff? Or
yes. Yep, we love to do that.
And Jessica, you should mention that you're in search of a new president. Is that correct?
We are. The board is reviewing a list of candidates now. Jody, our current CEO, is rotating out at the end of April, and so the board is working to bring a new person on. I really don't know too much about it. There's a search committee of the board.
Okay.
Yeah, but my understanding is that they are having a lot of conversations with the other member stations and people in the system, public radio system. So it's good.
Okay. Was there anything else that that you thought of that was triggered by questions that you want to tell us?
PRPD has really been looking at itself hard lately, the last year, 6 months or so, and it's been really helpful for me to have this conversation with you all. So thank you again for taking the time to have me on. But I think it could be really good for PRPD and public radio in general to partner with you all. So thanks again for hearing me out.
Okay.
I want to thank you, Jessica, for making time for us. And we'll certainly be in touch shortly.
Okay, great. Thanks, Maxie.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Right.
Okay.
All right, she's gone.
So now we'll hear from you, Maxie, your report, please.
Okay. All right. First of all, thanks, everybody, for being attentive and listening to Jessica's presentation. Like Greater Public, it's not necessarily a PNB vote matter, but I thought it would be useful for the members of the board to understand the direction we're going for, or towards, I should say, in terms of affiliation. I think the resources at prpd.org are quite useful for our programmers and our program directors. The talk show handbook and the PD handbook are really useful tools, and those PDs that are able to make the conference will benefit. I've been going to the PRPD for years, and it's always a useful conference to attend. So with that said, I'll launch into the executive director report and certainly leave, hopefully, time for Q&A. I've got a lot to report. It's unfortunate that we're not at quorum. There's a lot of information to share today, and I think a lot of good news as well. I'm going to start with the audit fiscal year 17 and 18 update. Let you know that for the fiscal year 2017 audit, two META teams traveled to Berkeley and LA to work with management to obtain outstanding audit requests. The majority of the requested items have been provided and uploaded to the online portal. NEDA also uploaded a copy of the open items request list with detailed notes and explanations based upon research and discussion with management. NEDA was not able to obtain supporting documentation for the following requests, and there's a few listed here: KPFA, KPFK, and the Pacifica National Office, other endowment funds in particular. Union agreement, they received it from WPFW, KPFK, and WBAI, but not from the other station. Stipulated award agreements for unpaid wages, also unavailable. Documents for property sold at the Berkeley location, accrued expense, accounts payable, KPFK contribution revenue also unable to be provided at that time. So they're still working on things, but they're really close to finalizing the FY17 audit. A quick note on that, by the way, the auditors are working to prepare a draft of the financial statement, including footnotes, based on the working trial balance prepared by Meta, which included consolidated balance sheet, income statement, and statement of functional expenses. Anything that they do not have to complete the statement or footnotes, i.e. missing numbers or information, will be highlighted in the draft. Field work for the FY17 audit is scheduled to be performed remotely during the week of April 15th through the 19th. There may be additional requests during this time as well as follow-up questions. This will not be a clean audit, and the auditors will issue a qualified opinion due to the deteriorating financial state of the organization. Again, I'll repeat that. This will not be a clean audit, and the auditors will issue a qualified opinion due to the deteriorating financial state of the organization. That's the same opinion that I believe was given for fiscal year 16 and 15 as well. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. Here's the update on fiscal year 2018 audit. Field work for the 2018 audit is scheduled from May 20th through the 24th, 2019. Meta team members obtained copies of 2018 monthly bank statements from the Public Radio Archive. I'm sorry, the Pacific Radio Archive, KPFK, WPFW, WBAI, while on site. Wandrin Desames also provided access to view and print bank statements within the Bank of America Cash Pro web application. Meta has begun reconciling the 28 cash balances and will update lead sheets for each cycle. KPFK, PRA, and KPFC reconcile their own cash accounts. Meta will review. Testing and sampling selections cannot begin until the 2017 audit is complete. So that's the report on the audits for fiscal year 17 and 18. The next thing on my agenda, items for the executive director's report, I wanted to tell you about some things that I've been working on of late that I think should be of note. I have forwarded a motion for underwriting, for Pacifica specific underwriting. I presented that motion to the Pacifica National Board Strategic Planning Committee earlier this week, following a meeting that was held by the Strategic Planning Committee on Monday. I submitted that document, I believe, on Tuesday. And so I'm not sure how soon the committee will be able to vote or review or discuss that issue, but I just want to let you all know that I have submitted a formal motion for consideration. Also, in terms of proposals, I'm working with Jan Goodman to present a plan to, number one, create slotted community advisory boards in each Pacifica market. As you may know, we only have two functioning community advisory boards in our five stations. To be CPB compliant, we have to have all five stations with functioning, documented, meeting regularly community advisory boards. The slotted concept has been discussed. If there are questions, I can answer that later. The second aspect of that proposal is the potential collapse of the LSB structure as CPB recommended into community advisory boards. And the third is to present a motion to create an elected and slotted Pacifica National Board. So the proposal we're working on will provide all three scenarios for consideration. The next proposal I've been working on is with Mansoor Sabah to present a plan for a virtual annual Pacifica Foundation conference designed to create and advance the Pacifica Foundation strategic plan informed by staff, local station board, Pacifica National Board, Pacifica National Office, and industry expertise. That would include NETA, Greater Public, PRPD, CPB, and others. The next item I'll discuss is the hiring of an interim or non-interim NES. As many of you may know, the bylaws suggest that a new NES should be hired in the month of March to meet the deadline or to be aligned with the timeline to have a November local station board election for this year. I have worked with Renee Penaloza, who was our NES for this previous election that just ended. She has agreed in principle to a contract to serve either as an interim NES or to be the NES for the entire cycle. I'll explain that in just a minute. This position, if it's an interim, would establish foundational aspects of the elections while a formal EEO compliance search proceeds in April. The question is if it's even necessary for me to do a formal search, since in the past, the executive director has not done a formal search. It's been more of an appointment situation. So Renee has, she and I have worked on two agreements, one as an interim, the other would just be her being appointed as the NES, and I'm certainly open to dialogue, discussion, and debate about that. A couple things that should be known about the proposal that we're working on, or the contract, I should say. One of the things we're looking at is a paper-free and LES-free model for the elections. The NES, or the interim NES, would be only for the month of April. The search would have to happen during that month, and I would appoint a new NES, or if Renee decides to go for that position and she were to be awarded the position, the NES officially would take over in May through November. The total 2019 election cycle budget is estimated at $75,000, which is a dramatic decrease in expense considering what we spent this last cycle. It's half or even more, less than half of what we spent on the last cycle. And I can provide more details in a closed session and or by an email if there are questions about any other particulars about that contract that's being discussed. But it's very similar to the previous NES contracts, by the way. On the programming front, I've been working with the Pacifica PDs and GMs to do the following. Number one, utilize greater public resources, the membership that we have there, resources, tools, and best practices regarding pledge drives. As you know, most of our stations have been through unsuccessful pledge drives. One of the things I wanted the greater public membership for was to understand best practices regarding pledge drives so that we could become more efficient and effective in our membership and fundraising efforts. So there are a lot of tools there. Many of the PDs and GMs have been reviewing, and so far, nothing but positive response to the wealth of resource there. My next stage of working with the PDs and GMs is to articulate a plan so that they can implement some of the best practices in the upcoming drives. Democracy Now! Promo stunt that I've mentioned in previous meetings will begin in mid-April and go through August of 2019. What that is, in short, is a hyper promotion strategy of Democracy Now! Airing on Pacifica stations. It's having the Democracy Now! Team cut promos that can air throughout the day on our stations. The goal is to run somewhere around 100 spots a week, promoting the fact that Democracy Now! Is on our air. I can answer questions if there are some, but this has been a highly successful, proven approach to promoting not only just a single day part or a program, but also making sure that your listeners who listen at other times of day find the effort and time to listen to your most popular programming. The last thing in terms of working with the PDs and GMs, operational matters, looking at mandatory clocks for the volunteer programming, quarterly meetings with all volunteer programmers, and must-carry programming across the network. One of the concerns that was expressed is that there are a lot of good ideas for national programming. The concern is that some stations have not agreed to carry programs that have been produced for national consumption through the network. And if we are going to get close to the network effect, there may be a need to create a must-carry clause with some of the productions. I'm still looking into, you know, how that would play out politically, if you will, within the organization and otherwise. Another on the programming front I should mention is that I'm engaged in discussions with American Public Media regarding BBC programming. I've mentioned this before in previous conversations as well. I'm investigating a group buy for Pacifica stations. BBC English language programming would be the target. And in addition to that, there are some special BBC offerings that are only available through direct relationships with the BBC. I've fortunately have some of those relationships. BBC Mundo is a Spanish language digital service. It's primarily web and mobile app. A lot of our stations have Spanish language programming, or at least have enough of it for it to be a consideration. And this would be a value add to a service that we could provide in that direction. The little known fact about the BBC is that their largest audience globally is the continent of Africa. And in Houston, New York, and in Washington, D.C. in particular, there are large African diaspora communities. The BBC offering, if we offer BBC programming on the continent of Africa in those markets, I think that there's an audience to attract. And then other options, again, looking at Pan-Asian, South Central American, and other content, again, English language, the priority there. But that's very early stages. It's more of an exploratory conversation, part of a programming strategy that I look to share with the PDs and GMs and see where it goes. Right now, there's a lot of skepticism, I would argue, around the BBC. But as someone who's programmed it and also looking at our markets that we serve and the opportunities to serve international communities, I think it's a viable option. So we'll explore it more. Last piece on the programming tip is the audience data. You heard Jessica mention Radio Research Consortium and Arbitron and all that. All five stations are now current in their payment of bills owed to RRC for PPM audience data. That's incredibly important. I would argue that any station that's not using audience data is flying blind. And the unfortunate thing about our stations is that none of them have really been subscribing to this audience data for the length of a year. And if you know the use of the analysis and use of program data, it's really best to determine if programming is successful if you can look at it over the course of a year. And so without having that year-long scope, if you will, it's difficult, I think, to make judgments on whether programs are successful or not. But that's a minor piece of it. The main thing I'm happy about is that they are all subscribing and should all be receiving data in the short term. I also shared with this entire Pacifica National Board what a monthly report includes, how that info can be used to understand the effectiveness of programming, scheduling, and trend analysis. The invitation remains open to anyone with questions regarding the use of people meter audience data. Lastly, as for Pacifica station matters with respect to unions, the question came up. I've been in several conversations with AFTRA representatives in Los Angeles, D.C., and in New York. And the question that I posed today in an internal Pacifica meeting with Meta and WBAI in particular, was should our stations be governed exclusively per California union AFTRA policy or each state's individual one? If there's anyone on this call who knows the definitive answer on that, that would be helpful. NEDA is doing some investigation on that. The reason that's important is because our bylaws and Pacifica policy differ from what each of these individual states, Texas, D.C., and New York, have in terms of policy regarding after-contract employees, et cetera, after-employee designation. And it would be nice if it was all uniformly under California, in my opinion. But again, maybe Meta is doing the investigation. If anyone on the call knows definitively the answer to that, that would be helpful. As we continue negotiations in New York around some latent union issues, and of course they're dealing with union issues across the network as they arise. So that's my report. Thanks for listening, and again, if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Benito.
Thank you, Maxie. Benito.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Maxie, I have two basic kind of questions. Number one, with regard to governance, is why don't you repeat what your proposals around the LSV, and especially around whatever you said I couldn't hear about the PMB. So that's number one. And then number two, I don't, with regard to the audits, I don't know what a clean audit or clean opinion, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I can.
As opposed to a qualified opinion, I don't know what that is.
I can explain that. Thanks for your questions. A clean opinion simply means that they found no discrepancy in the information provided by the organization for them to be able to do a functional audit. Unfortunately, we don't get a clean one because we have missing material for financial management and accounting practices were improper or done in a way that is difficult to understand or interpret. And so we won't get the benefit of a clean audit for these in large part because we're going back in history trying to find material and reconciling things, and it's just not a clean process. So that's what that means. In terms of the LSB and PMB governance proposal, so let me break that down. There's three elements to it. The first one deals specifically with the establishment of the community advisory board. Two of our stations currently have them, three do not. And if they have them, they're not meeting regularly. To be CPB compliant, to qualify for community service grants, the money that we've been on probation, if you will, and out of compliance to receive, you have to have a community advisory board that meets regularly, that is open to the public, and is documented and posts its meetings for public consumption in terms of the notifications of those meetings. I have managed community advisory boards at two stations, and in one of the cases, we had what we called a slotted board. What that means is we took an inventory of our footprint, the signal footprint. We understood the counties that we served. We understood the demographics within that county, and we also identified certain areas of expertise or professional background or social activism or community service that we wanted to have on the board. And so you have basically a three-year term, and each term is made up of three classes. So you've got eight people of a 24 board coming in every year. When you replace the eight outgoing members, the first thing you do is you ask yourself, where are they coming from? What's their racial, ethnic, what composition, and what areas of expertise or knowledge did they encompass? And you work to replace them with people who fit the same bill. The reason that's important is because you maintain a community advisory board that is reflective in a representational way of the communities that you serve. And so that's the benefit of that, and that's why I'm proposing it. The second aspect of the proposal deals with the collapse of the local station boards into community advisory boards. So you'll recall when I met with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, one of their recommendations that we consider collapsing the local station boards because one of the big concerns they have with our organization is that we are over-governed, as they said. The word was over-governed. That we have too much of a governance infrastructure, and I think even the members of this call would acknowledge it's often dysfunctional and non-productive.
at the end of the day, the collapsing of the local station boards into community advisory boards, slotted or not, would not only allow it to be compliant with CBB in terms of the cabs, but would allow the organization to have a governance of the Pacifica National Board as the governing structure and the sole governing structure, because the community advisory board is advisory in nature. They give advice, they give counsel, they give support. They can certainly enact supportive measures at the station's request. But they are there to support the station in all aspects, whether it be fundraising, whether it be program development, whether it be in understanding community engagement opportunities, you name it. It's a supportive role. But the governance lies with the PMB. The third model, the third aspect of the proposal deals with restructuring the Pacifica National Board. Obviously, there would be a need to do some modification of the bylaws, but the goal here would be to, again, look at a slotted model. If the cabs are slotted and the PMB comes from, for the most part, the community advisory board, the boards at the local station, then you've already got a slotted system feeding into what would be a slotted Pacifica National Board. And so in many respects, you would have a representational PMB of the community served via the local stations in their cabs. The reason this is, again, offered is for the very point I made mentioned earlier, and that is that Pacifica really needs to graduate to a point that while it keeps an elected board, Pacifica National Board, that is elected by its membership, because that's part of our ethos, that we are electing people to slots so that they have a functional value that they bring to the organization beyond a $25 donation and a popular vote. That these are people who bring some area of knowledge, expertise, impact that they can actually have in directing the organization towards its betterment. These are people that would represent, obviously, the five stations still, the affiliates would have representation as well. And again, it would be elected, but what we would be doing is ensuring that we're bringing a board together that can actually be useful in a tangible way in terms of the aspects of radio station operations, that they would be able to do fundraising, that they would be able to assist in program acquisition and development, that they would be able to help with community engagement and business management. These will be people, in some cases, who would know financial management. And so we wouldn't have this situation where the audits go unattended to for years because the lack of expertise on the board. So that's what the proposal speaks to. I know it's contentious for some. And, of course, the big concern is that people won't give up power. But I want to appeal to the higher nature and the better angels of people and recognize that if we all really want Pacifica to thrive and not just survive, that we need to have a board that has real value proposition built into its very structure. That's what the answer would be for your question.
Hey, Diana, can you hear me now?
Yes, yep, go ahead. What's your question, Adriana?
Madam Chair, I want just to say what I'm talking through. It's not my device. I'm talking right now to Mr. Hier Wagenstrom, because obviously you cannot hear when I'm talking through mine. Okay, it's not my equipment.
No, I can't. It's not my equipment either.
What?
You're showing on my strobe, and it's showing that you're not muted. So I'm. Maybe the number that you're using is a bad number. Okay, thank you for letting us know.
No, I can ask my question.
Did you have a question? Yes, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Okay, Mr. Jackson, I will tell you all together and then you can answer the way that you want. First of all, I would like this report, if you can send this report in writing to all of us, that would be really important. About the issues of the audit, in detail and in writing, because we know the some stations have some specific problem. You mentioned some, but let's see what do you have. KPFT is one of the stations that have a functioning cap. Can you tell me who else has it?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. Then, before you go further, Adriana, before you go further, I couldn't hear that question.
Yes,
you said KPFT.
If you can tell us, I know that KPFT has a functioning cap, Community Advisory Board. You say that other station, I don't know who the other station is, but KPFT have one that is working, and the meetings are posted there, and the reports go normally to the LSB. According to, you can answer all together later, let me just ask the question.
Sure.
Yeah.
I
one
just
of
want to
the
make
problems
sure.
that we are having, yeah, one of the problems that we are having was you said that there are different unions contracting different units. I believe that this is one of the problems that most people don't want to talk about, that sometimes employees of different unions are obligating the foundation in something that is not the decision of the foundation, it's the decision of specific groups or specific employees. That is one of the problems. And you are talking about elections. On the other side, you were saying that you want to replace the LSPs with community advisory boards. In case to do that, you need to you know that you need a major change in the bylaws because it's not
absolutely
he's talking about. And in the case, let me finish. And in the case, in that case, if that is the case, why to have elections again if the idea is not to have an LSP? You can answer all of that. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start it with the last one. There's not any aspect of the three proposals, if you will, that are part of the governance proposal that don't include elections. I recognize that elections are a vital aspect of the democratic approach of Pacifica, and so there's no effort to remove elections from the process. All that we're trying to do, in the way that you would if you went to do your local voting during an election period, you'd be voting for judges in the judges category, you'd be voting for law enforcement folk in the law enforcement category, voting for politicians based on, you know, their political category. So it's just the slotted concept does not remove the voting process. So that's number one. I'm not sure if I answered the whole question because I can't remember all of it. So if I forget anything, just come back to me on that one. In terms of the AFTRA, I don't disagree with what you're saying. All I'm trying to do is find out whether we have to abide by the local jurisdictions, the state policies for AFTRA in the markets that we're in, or if we can. Since the reason it came up is because all of Pacifica is under one federal ID. The whole organization, doesn't matter if it's New York, D.C., Houston, Berkeley, L.A., it's all under one federal ID. And so if that's the case, it is true that all employees are part of one organization, even if they're employed through the different stations. If that's the case, then it bears reasoning that all of our union contracts would be with the policies germane to the state of California. It's a question that is being researched as we speak, and hopefully I'll have resolution on that soon, because it may null and void after arrangements contracts that we have had in New York and D.C. and Houston that don't need to be in place or are improperly in place, or if nothing else, the guidelines have to adhere to what we're doing in California as opposed to what is specific to the other markets. The other thing I think you said about doing the audit report in writing, I can certainly submit that. I'll copy and paste what I provided. In fact, I can send the entire report to, the secretary and to the chair, and they can distribute it. I feel like I didn't answer your last question, though, Adriana, so if you want to repeat that, I can try it.
again.